Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
For hundreds of years, anthropologists have studied the social relationships of human beings. And none have been more confounding than what they call the different strokes effect.
Get it?
Meet Jade Gulliver, a charmingly low-maintenance, amicable sci-fi fan and avid podcaster. And David Lim, a top model strutting, goldfish-loving, walking jukebox. So, can you handle the difference? Get ready for Different Strokes.
Because it takes different strokes to move the world. Yes, it does. It takes different strokes to move the world.
Like, ding, you know, subscribe, download, let's hear it. Ding, you know, subscribe, download, let's hear it.
Subscribe to A Different Strokes Guide to Podcasts.
Tonight in our podcast segment, we are joined by one third of the Box Cutters podcast and the main man from the Outland Institute. His name is John Richards. Thank you for coming on Different Strokes, John.
Thank you, Jade. I was just thinking tonight in our podcast segment's weird, isn't it? Because there's no time in podcasts.
Yes, there isn't. But it's a podcast segment that's on a live program.
So we're here tonight, but unless you're listening to the podcast segment in a podcast version. Oh, that's wrong, isn't it?
You know how I like to do complicated things, like have a podcast program about podcasts so that things will implode on themselves.
Yeah, you're going to destroy the internet. It's just going to implode on itself. Big black hole where the internet used to be.
So, first off, I'm going to ask you about your show that you did as a live program at Joy, but is now a podcast program called The Outland Institute. What is The Outland Institute?
The Outland Institute is, well, I mean, oddly enough, it was actually originally a short film, was Outland, about a gay science fiction group, which I co-wrote and directed. Then from that, I decided to do a blog to force myself to write more, which was The Outland Institute, because out and in, I just like the two of them together. And that, oddly enough, took the fancy of the former head of Joy, who kept asking me to do a radio show, and I kept saying no. And finally, I gave in and said yes. And so, yeah, so the idea of The Outland Institute, it's culture. Pop culture, I like to say, because it's not art, you know, and it's
not highbrow.
The weird thing is, I feel like we can talk about highbrow stuff if we want,
yeah.
But I'd like to talk about it in a lowbrow way, because I actually think culture is more interesting than arts, and I think it's too easy to go, oh, let's get all highfalutin about the arts, whereas getting highfalutin about, you know, television or architecture or, you know, stuff on the street, advertising. I'm obsessed with advertising. That stuff to me is more interesting, to find themes, and also with especially with the radio show, it was about finding things that link stuff. So rather than saying let's review a film that's out this week, we'd say there's a film out this week, let's look at the concept of, you know, like a 3D's back in, let's look at other gimmicks of cinema that, you know, that maybe never caught on, like The Tingler, the one I'm particularly obsessed with, the William Castle thing where he used to wire up some of the seats in the auditorium. And at various points, they would send electric shocks into the audience.
That might make me vomit.
There should be more of that. That'd be great. Not you vomiting.
I remember how they used to, in the cinemas, they used to have amusement ride type things as well. Like when you'd go to those amusement parks where they'd make the cinema move. So you'd be sitting there watching a movie. Have you ever been to any of those?
That sounds great.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
There was one I was reminded on the way in tonight. There was one called, I think it was Sensorround, which involved a really, really low, it was rumble sensation, like using really low sound in order to create movement and disturbance, you know, through the cinema. And I think it was like six films used it in possibly very late 70s, early 80s. And I think Meteor and Earthquake were the only two of any note, both terrible films. And it got discontinued because it kept cracking the concrete that the cinemas were made of, and possibly going to kill everyone. More of that. See, that's what we need, James Cameron. Not your bloody blue Smurfs in 3D. No, we need the potential of death in the cinemas. That'll bring him back.
So talk a bit about how you approach... I mean, you've obviously got... The Outland Institute was a live TV, a live radio program, and then you turn it into a podcast. How do you approach them differently, or is it...
Well, I mean, a little bit. This is the way things... I've left out Box Cutters, of course, which is the more prominent thing that I do, which, again, I was invited to go on because there's a TV show currently being made based on a short film. Mm. Everything's all linked into each other. And Box Cutters have been going already for 2.5 years when I joined it. It's now going for 4. Mm-hmm. And... that is deliberately a podcast-only show. They tried it out on the air, and they didn't really like it. And one of the things about podcasting, and I did try a little bit to bring this into my radio show, is that it's very intimate, I think, podcasting. Radio is... I mean, one of the great things I actually tell you, Joy, when you start, is, you know, you're always broadcasting to one person. Mm-hmm. You're always meant to be talking to one person. But I think radio generally has a feeling that it's talking to... a group, whereas podcasting is purely one-on-one. Most people listen to it on headphones.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something you gather around the computer to listen to. It's yeah. just you listening to it. And I think people have a really intimate relationship.
It's like physically in your head.
It is, yeah, yeah. And it's just you. You know they're talking to just you. You know that you're the only person hearing this at that moment.
Yeah.
It's almost like a telephone call. That's how kind of intimate it is. And with and the other thing I listen to an awful lot of is BBC Radio 4. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do was more of that stuff where I actually don't... I think playing music on the radio is the most boring thing you could possibly do with radio. Like, yeah, playing one song after another is, you know... I mean, there are people... I mean, Adam C. Flip the Tape was brilliant. Absolutely superb doing that because he would also inform you and play new stuff. But if you're just going to play stuff I already know, I can do that at home.
Yeah.
You know. Whereas I think radio has the possibility of doing a lot more, and the BBC-style radio, which is probably closer to podcasting in Australia, where you can have segments, you can go longer. My pieces would I always planned the show around 15-minute segments,
yep.
which is longer than most people would normally do. I think eight to 10 is considered...
Us people in late night are allowed to do longer segments.
Yeah, but daytime. And look, and the very first show I did, I played a 20-minute interview with a cultural theorist about Robin the Boy Wonder and his place in cultural context. And I did have someone come into the studio shouting in panic for me to stop and play a song, and then realizing it was a pre-record, and so nothing could be done.
Yeah.
But yeah, even people within the building were a bit freaked out.
Yeah.
That, and it was like, you know, playing 2 10-minute interviews about Robin the Boy Wonder and his place in cultural context, no better than playing 1 20-minute interview. You're either interested or you're not interested. You know, yeah. playing Kylie in the middle, not going to make it better for anyone. And so my thought with the radio show was that it was always the first step towards the podcast,
yep.
I think, in many ways. I think podcasts are better because they're edited mm-hmm. rather than live. And I think that puts me opposite what most radio is about. Most people go, oh, I love the immediacy of radio. It's the liveness of radio. It's the fact mm. that you can end up accidentally asking a 12-year-old about being raped. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, to me, that's the worst possible thing you can do with radio. And that's, yeah. you know, and people like Carl Sanderlands, that's the ultimate result yeah. of approaching that worst type of radio. Whereas, you know, let's get people to talk, let's edit their conversations, let's actually play the best stuff to air, not...
I think that's really interesting because you approach your podcast completely different to the way we actually approach the Different Strokes podcast, mm-hmm. where we actually only edit out the music. So what people get to hear of our show on the podcast is basically what went to air.
Well, Box Cutters does the same thing. It's a bit of a rule, like a no-edit rule if possible. But I actually, yeah, I love edited stuff. Yeah. I mean, one of my favourite podcasts is Radiolab.
Which yes, I don't know if I love it.
Yeah, and Radiolab is immensely produced. You yeah. know, it's a show, but it's theoretically a science podcast, which I mm-hmm. didn't realise until the third show I was listening
to. Who does know it's about science? Yeah, it could be about anything.
It's weird. It's like science, you know, secretly science. It's slipping in the science without you noticing.
It's like some sort of weird way of like trying to get you to eat your veggies.
So it is. It really is.
Okay, well, let's talk about... You're doing 2 podcasts. You've mm-hmm. got the Outland Institute and the Box Cutters. Now, the Box Cutters is an independent kind of offshoot of Triple J in a weird kind
Triple
of
R.
way.
Triple R.
In a weird kind of way. What... Do you find yourself approaching those 2 programs differently?
I do, yeah.
Yeah?
Because the Box Cutters, I came on as a guest and was then a guest for a few times, and they said, do you want to just stay on? So I still always see my role in that as being more...
Your special commentator, a colour commentator?
Yeah, kind of, you know, I've always felt more to one side on that. So you know, I might organise guests, I might bring in segments, but I'm always kind of... I always feel like I'm part of the ensemble, and I always see more sort of Josh takes the kind of hosting role on that. So it's always that thing of, that's quite nice because I follow someone else's lead. Whereas the Outland Institute was coming entirely from my own idea. And basically, I did approach that as a show entirely on, it's just my personality on air. You know, I only interviewed people I wanted to interview. I only covered subjects I really wanted to cover. I mean, I've got experts, as we call them, on the show. So there's like a, you know, there's Narelle M. Harris, who's a published author, is our book expert, and Glenn Dunks from Stale Popcorn does our film segment and all these sort of things. So they can come up with ideas that are really interesting. But it's very much meant to be kind of one person's approach to pop culture. Rather than, you know, I wouldn't get someone in just because they're popular in town if I thought they were crap.
Yeah. Tell us about what your plans are for the future with Outland. Are you just going, are you just taking it?
Well, with Outland Institute, the idea is that we got to the end of the year, got to 22 episodes, just like Buffy. And I said, let's call that the end of season one. It was actually Josh Gunnell, bless him. He was saying how the fact that in radio, in Australian radio, everyone thinks you have to keep going forever.
Yeah.
Which leads to really bad radio. And he was going, why not say that's the end of season one and actually have some time to you know, regroup? And I went, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So what the plan is, it's going to be a podcast-only show for probably about the next 6 months or so, and then we'll be back on air again mid-2010. Whether or not, I mean, you know, who knows what's going to
happen. What fate might bring.
Exactly. But it is going to be a podcast show. We're going to approach it slightly differently. I want to do more documentary-style stuff. So we've got a few interesting bits and pieces planned for the next year, and we'll be hopefully doing a lot more going out in person to record, because I did a piece for episode 22, which was when Steve Cruz and Bruno Bond, the two porn stars, were in town recently.
Thanks for coming on Different Strokes.
Oh, it's a pleasure, John. Jay, just to be in your presence.
If you want to catch up with John's Outland Institute or his Box Cutters podcast, please tell us, John.
You can go straight to the Joy website, joy.org.au, to find the podcast for the Outland Institute. You can also go to the Outland Institute website, which is something like outlandinstitute.wordpress.com, but I always
something complicated.
Something like that. Just Google Outland Institute. I am number one. And Box Cutters, you can find at boxcutters.net.
You know, first of all, I am very old school. Like, I have to have... I have to have the magazine.
Who said print is dead? Here's a Different Strokes perspective on magazines and publishing.
This is Different Strokes on Joy 94.9 with Jade and Dave. Okay, so I'm covering street press this week in the magazine segment, and I fully intend to have a David Lim rant. I've even like put it into my list here for an insert David Lim rant about paper stocks and distribution here.
Oh, that sounds really nerdy and really publishing.
It does, but I want to hear stuff about you picking stuff off the street and smelling it.
Nuh-uh. I don't do that. Look, I draw the line at street press because there's something funky about newspaper stock. And no, I just don't do it, Jen. Yeah. Just sometimes you don't even need to pick it up to sniff it. You just have to pick it up, and it's the aura, the ink. Ooh.
So just to give a bit of a background on street press emerged out of underground world of fanzine publishing that became a commercial thing called fly posting. And then street press emerged in the 80s as a sort of hands-on guide to local entertainment. In Australia, Sydney and Melbourne lead the way in terms of press publishing. And there was all of this, during the 80s, there was all of this stuff in the mainstream press and the daily newspapers about street press wars. Like it was like, you know, they were trying to outdo each other. But as sort of the music, it seems to be really heavily tied into music, the music scene. And there's, as the music scene has kind of diversified during the 90s, street press did, and there were all of these different styles of street press. So you've got dance, you've got gaming, you've got fashion.
I've never seen a gaming one, to be honest. I've seen mothers and breastfeeding street press.
I've seen just about every kind of street press. Like, it's just very, like, there's just street press everywhere now.
God.
We're being overrun.
It's a waste problem.
In the noughties or the 2000s, Street Press sort of brought in collaborations with things like TV and radio and online, and now every Australian capital has at least two street, you know, major street weekly Street Press, and all of these spin-offs. I thought I'd just talk briefly about some of the major ones. I mean, the big ones in Melbourne are probably Beat and In Press, which are the two music-focused ones. So you've got Beat, which is it's basically music news, arts, featured articles, gigs, clubs. And both, I mean, you might want to correct me on this, Dave, but with Beat and In Press, the content is not really different.
There's not really different at all. I mean, the style of writing obviously is different because they've got different writers.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that the presentation is also very similar. And if you look at the advertisers as well, the companies that are likely to advertise with both magazines often do it with both.
Mm.
You know, why not just advertise with both of them?
And so it's interesting that both those things managed to survive because they're very, very similar. Like there's just, it's like, you know, we talk about niche, niche magazines and all of that kind of stuff. Like to have these kind of two publications that, but I kind of feel like it's one of those things where you're very loyal to one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm more of an Impress person.
And a lot of that loyalty tends to be around a writer or a particular, you know, I mean, I used to absolutely love the pop. The pop
segment
in Impress. It was my favorite thing to read. I used to read it first thing every Wednesday morning, I think it is, that it comes out.
Yeah, when it comes out, you flick to that part of the publication.
And
yeah,
it was brilliant. I loved it. And I, you know, we were doing Different Strokes back then. And I remember that I would say, Dave, the first thing I read today, it was hilarious. Did you read that thing about Lilo? It was hilarious. It was awesome. You know, it's there's often that kind of seems to be the major difference. But then I've kind of thought, you know, I guess the other major thing for us, I mean, being at Joy, is we've got a lot of street press that are aimed at, you know, gay and lesbian audience or GLBTIQ audience. So the major ones that are around are MCV and Southern Star, and then there's Cherry, which is the sort of queer chick focused one. It's a bit more glossy. It's got fashion and entertainment. It's not weekly.
No.
Is it monthly?
I'm not sure. I see it every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you've got MCV, which it is slightly more glossy than you're going to have to help me out here, Dave.
Yeah.
Then Southern Star.
They all look the same to me. I mean, it depends on the kind of paper stock, and I'm not the expert with paper stock, but I know it when I feel it.
Yeah.
Like at the back of my mind, I think one of them is kind of like using Safeway. You know how Safeway sends out their flyers.
Yeah.
One of them uses that kind of material, I think.
Yeah.
And the other one's more kind of glossy, but not like Harper's Bazaar glossy.
No, it's got just a bit more gloss on it.
We're not very good at that.
And I kind of wonder whether there's that same kind of difference, like if there's that same sort of war going on, like I only read MCV, I only read Southern Star, like between those two.
I think
there's
more difference, though, between the two publications. There definitely is more of a difference than, say, Beat and Impress.
Yes.
I think they cover different content. I think maybe MCV is a bit more lifestyle and a bit more longer features.
And I think they would have to, like, to be able to survive in – yeah, I think Southern Star is definitely a bit more newsy in terms of, like, you know, it's that kind of instant news stuff that's, like, just that kind of – I guess I'm going to call it throwaway news, basically, that kind of stuff, whereas MCV is a bit more sort of feature focused, I guess.
Yeah.
That seems to be my understanding of the main differences between the two. So I guess I kind of brought that up because we've got our member magazine that's out at the moment, like here, David Lim is editor and chief.
My goodness, how can we compete? It's a good thing that, no, I mean, I'm very happy to be part of here. It's a great publication. It really is just for our Joy members, or anyone really that's interested in what we're doing around the station. I think it's a good thing for the station's branding and the name and all that. So I'm very happy to be part of that. And if you haven't seen it already, I'm sure there's plenty lying around the studio.
Yes. And, you know, if you are a member, you would have got it in the mail.
Got it in the mail, yes. And it's always wonderful to, you know, think about content, what I want to put in the magazine, you know, work with different writers and, you know, the people that I always get to write for the magazine, like yourself, Jade, because you have to.
Yes, I have to. And then, you know, I'm constantly calling Dave up saying, can we just, you know, can we get an extension? Can we do this? Can we do that? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You say that it's about pop artist versus character.
Pop artist versus character.
Forget what you've heard. Go to listen to Strummy Lala music, as I like to call it.
Get ready for a Different Strokes take on music.
You're listening to Different Strokes on Joy 94.9. Now tonight for our music segment, I've decided to review Vanessa Amorosi's new album, Hazardous. Now, look, I wouldn't say I'm a big, big fan of Vanessa Amorosi. I feel like when she peaked in the late 90s and the early noughties, I felt like I didn't catch on then. Absolutely Everybody, great song. What was the other one? Shine. That was another good song, but I just didn't feel like I connected with her music at the time. So I've always kind of thought, look, I respect her for the fact that she can really sing. I've always seen the comparisons between her and Tina Arena to be quite real because, I mean, both of them are Australian and both of them have very big voices. And I always felt like if Vanessa Amorosi knew how to tame that voice and maybe just quit it with the over-singing sometimes, I think she could be huge. I really think she could be huge. So we're now, I mean, she's been in the industry for about 11 years now. She's been making music for 11 years. Out comes her fourth studio album in November this year. And it's called Hazardous, like I said. Now, the album actually is quite a different feel for all you old school Vanessa Amorosi fans who is used to her making pop music. And then the last album where she came back with called Somewhere in a Real World. That one was quite a sobering album. We're used to the boppy pop tunes, and then when Somewhere in the Real World came out, everyone's like, oh, Vanessa Amorosi's grown up. She's making serious music. What will we make of that? Perfect, which was one of the songs off that album, was huge on radio, but really the album was, I think, predominantly snubbed. I went out to buy the album and I thought, okay, this is a good feel. I mean, this is Vanessa Amorosi telling us she wants to make real music, so to speak. She didn't want to just make throwaway pop. But then when she came forth with Hazardous, which is this new album, I kind of thought, okay, this is very pop. This is pop and proud of it. And that is more along my mantra when it comes to pop music. I don't see anything wrong with pop music, to be honest. I love pop music. If it's done right and if it's done with integrity and if it's done well, then that's absolutely worthy of purchase, worthy of support. So the album Hazardous actually came out in November the 6th here, and it debuted at number 7 on our ARIA album charts, and to date has probably sold roughly over 35,000 copies, so that kind of certifies it gold. The lead singer from the album, This Is Who I Am, actually debuted at number 1 and spent 2 weeks there and has to date sold 70,000 copies. So that is platinum sales we're talking there. And what I found really surprising was when that song went number 1, everyone was popping a champagne and getting really excited. All the, you know, Ness fans on Twitter went nuts. And I realized that this is a very big deal for Vanessa Amorosi, this song going number 1, because this is her very, very first Australian number 1 single. And I thought, hell no, no way. She's been around for years. How can we shine? Absolutely Everybody. How can we have not made those songs number 1? I mean, clearly that was at the peak of her career at the time. So for this track to go number 1, I think it's been a long time coming. So I was very happy for her. But the second single, Hazardous, which I think only just came out sometime last week, it debuted at number 84 on our charts. So That one isn't doing quite as well. I read on ozpop.net or the Ozpop blog, and they actually said that Hazardous, the single, only sold 1,005 copies last week. So big drop from 70,000 copies, I'll say. Now, let's talk about the feel of the album Hazardous, because like I said, you know, this was really Vanessa Amorosi going back to her pop roots and making pop with integrity. That's what I liked about it. A lot of people have compared the Hazardous album to stuff that Pink is doing. A lot of people say she's channeling Pink. That's that kind of pop rock sound, you know, really big choruses. There's whiplashes of electro in it as well. So at parts, the production will remind you of the Veronica's Hook Me Up album. So if you're a fan of Pink or that last Veronica's album, you probably like this album. It's very boisterous. It's very gutsy. It's a really ballsy kind of record, which I love. Now, the first time I heard the album, I must confess, the first time I heard the Hazardous album, I thought, all these tracks sound the same. You know, is she channeling Pink from track 1 to 15? What's going on? But it's like one of those albums that you really have to let sit with for a while, and then the true colours and the true flavours come out with each track. You hear a bit of electro influence on a couple of these tracks. You hear a bit more, I don't know, a bit more 90s pop in some of them. Her vocals considerably stretched and pulled back. There's not as much over-singing or the vocal gymnastics as I've come to expect. And what was probably strangest with listening to this new album is I find that Vanessa Amorosi's vocals sometimes remind me of Shania Twain. Now, I might be the only one on this planet that thinks that, but seriously, have a listen to the new album. Have a listen to the twang, the vocals, and tell me it doesn't remind you of Shania Twain. Maybe it's just because I'm long overdue for a Shania Twain album. You know, I've been hanging out for that record so long, I start hearing Shania's voice on other people's records. But I'm feeling that Shania vibe. Now, the bulk of the album was actually done by Swedish producers Macho Psycho, who's, you know, produced for Pink, Natasha Bedingfield and Backstreet Boys. Couple of the highlights of the album for me, definitely This Is Who I Am, the lead single. Great lyrics. It's so uplifting, powerful chorus. Mr. Mysterious is another track on the album, and that features Shawnee B from TV Rock. Now, I've never heard a Vanessa Amorosi track with a rap breakdown before. Now, she's not turning into Jay-Z and Beyonce or anything like that. It's more like a dirty, sly electropop with, you know, like that male spoken word part with a really sleazy man voice. So that's Mr. Mysterious, one of the tracks on the album. And to be honest, although it was a little awkward to listen to at first, I've actually come to really like the saucy and skanky Vanessa Amorosi tracks on the album. Songs like Touch Me and Off On My Kiss. You know, she's taking the lyrical content of a song. She's going places that she's never done before. She's a grown woman now, fair enough. She can, you know, be a bit more flirty, be a bit more sensual on her tracks. So definitely worth a listen. And if you've been, you know, hearing me wax lyrical this whole time, have been dying to listen to tracks off Hazardous, this is a quick album in a blend. Have a listen to a couple of tracks off the album.
Different Strokes album in the blend. Vanessa Amorosi, Hazardous, This Is Who I Am. Well,
On My Kiss. You never had a girl that's quite like I think myself. That's why I'm here tonight. And all I think is about the things we get up to tonight. I'll get you off of my kiss. I'll get you up. I'll do, baby, almost anything.
Holiday.
What you waiting for? Are you forgetting your car keys, breathing uneasy, cold and so freezing cold? Not knowing your name and going insane with no one to blame but you. Maybe it's time to scrub up the grime, get out of the house and get away. Drinking tequila, dancing the dust stars, taking things too far apart.
Hazardous.
Lights flash, red to yellow. I can't control these things I do. Yeah, I know I should leave. Yeah, I know this is wrong. But I don't care. I don't want to be that strong. Like my bad, I just have a taste. Like an ocean that sweeps me away. Some things this good has to be.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.